Just one number. Just one.
Got him.
Welcome to Flipping Off, a purpose-driven podcast about flipping houses and making a difference. Oh, God. Okay. Hey. hey, y'all. This is Melina Boswell coming to you. NWAC. And so it's interesting today. So this is actually part two of a conversation that we started with club member Eric Walker. So I'll say, hey, Eric.
Hey.
All right. And in the studio, we have Frank Luna.
Hello.
Tim John Wilkinson.
Hey again.
And Mr. Oscar Solares.
Hello again.
So, you know, last time we were recording, like in full transparency, right? For us, it's just one conversation after another. We usually record, you know, three or four podcasts at a time. And so we try to keep the podcasts, though, in bite sizes that are, you know, easy for everybody to listen to, like on a drive. That was kind of mine and Dave's idea always. So the last time we were, that we spoke was about 5 minutes ago for us anyway.
Feels like 2 weeks.
Feels like 2 weeks. And it's probably 2 weeks for you listeners out there. So I want to acknowledge that. And I also, cause I think it's important to, for you guys to know that the intention behind, our podcasts is to, you know, to empower you, with truth. Right. So, you know, I always say this when people come to the introductions, hey, I'm not going to sell you the dream, right? Because I know you've already bought into the dream of what real estate investing can bring you. Everybody wants to sell you the dream about, you know, time freedom and vacation where you want and family time and, you know, blah, 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 and house of your dreams, car of your dreams. And so I don't think we need to be sold on that. I think that what I know to be the truth is that I bought the dream. You know, in the beginning, that's why I got into real estate investing is because somebody sold me the dream and I bought it. And then I put in the real hard work to make it a reality. And it is a process. It is not, you don't just arrive. And I think so much of the time we're all waiting to arrive. And what I've learned over the years is that the power isn't in the arrival. The power is in the process. And I think we're hardwired to not want to stay in the process. I think it's our nature to run from the process. And so I think it's important that we are honest about the process, you know, celebrating victories and celebrating losses, or maybe even, in my opinion, the real victory is there's so much victory in losing. I don't know if losing is the right word to say, but there's victory in the process no matter what. No matter what the outcome is, it's not about the outcome, right? It's about the process. It is process over outcome. And so it's difficult for most people to share the process with others, right? Because the process isn't always sexy. In fact, sometimes it's really, really painful. And so... Eric, I want to thank you before we get started here for being willing to share your process with us, because I know that it takes like ginormous amounts of courage to share the process because, yeah, it just is, because it's painful and being willing, and especially for someone like you who is introverted by nature and successful and intelligent, all of those wonderful traits also can... lead you down the dangerous road of a little bit of ego and pride. Yeah?
Yep.
And ego and pride will, you know, will be the things they'll take us out every single time. And every one of us, especially, you know, those of us that are entrepreneurial, that are drivers, that are, you know, chasing the dream, there has to be ego and pride involved. Otherwise, you know, those are good swords. If that's the right thing, you know, good swords to use to be able to survive in this crazy business that we're in, because it's competitive and it's tough, right? I always say it's simple, just not easy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the simplicity is of the tasks. The not easy part is all kinds of different things. It's all about the human element, what I would say the belly button factor that exists here. And so where we left off last time was how you were in this deal and it was your first time taking on a fix and flip, and we address all of the mistakes that you made, biggest one being not asking for help and really trying to do it on your own, that feeling of, I got this because I always got this, and then coming to the realization of, oh, God, I don't have it, and now I have to ask for help, and feeling shame, right?
Yep.
And embarrassment and, you know, all of those crappy feelings that come along with asking for help because now, like, you're not good enough. Now I've failed. Now I've, you know, all these other things. And then, of course, your girlfriend reminding you, you know, hey, yeah. Ask for help in a loving way, not in a condemning or, you know, way like that at all, but just supporting you, encouraging you to ask for help. So we left off last time that you did ask for help. You went to Tim and Oscar, and Tim's face was, Oscar was like, it's going to suck, but you're going to get through it. And Tim was like, holy crap, I don't know how he's ever getting out of this. Like he is, what did you say he is?
Screwed.
Okay. So, because Tim was looking at the numbers, because that's your,
just the
numbers. And Oscar's looking at the property and looking at the, you know, it's a great house, and he sees your vision of what you wanted to do, which is what everybody gets sucked into. Mm-hmm. Take something ugly and make it beautiful, and you had designs, and you had all these ideas of what you were going to do with it. And then, you know, Tim comes in with all the lovely news of the numbers just don't freaking work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you want to maybe pick up from there what you, like, did. Yeah. So did the two of you, what did you do?
We talked.
Did you wrap him in a blankie? And
it was probably a rough blanket.
it was made out of sandpaper.
Yeah, it was sandpaper or at least, you know, heavy, like, carpet, you know, rough. It was rough, I'm sure.
Burlap.
Yeah, it's so we asked them to get comps, right? And that's when you realize that, hey, there was a shift in the market,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't in his favor. Mm-hmm. And it's just
so there was some downward pressure.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's the thing, right? It's the reason that we say don't do point houses, mm-hmm. right? And typically what happens is people look at the numbers and say, hey, but I'm acquiring it for 600, right? So I'm good. Without doing the rest of the math or doing the rest of the looking at, you know, having some foresight to look at what the possibility exists within the market and what that shift looks like, and your customer base, your client base, the buyer's base shrinks, right? Because now you're in a much higher price point that less buyers are qualified to step into. Mm-hmm. So
the air is thinner up there.
So all that taken into account is, you know, Tim and I sat down and went over the numbers, and we both kind of looked at each other like, oh, crap, right?
Right. There was a couple things that I originally noticed was in that area, it's kind of a hilly area, mm-hmm. and we sit down low. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of comps in the $2 million range that if you're just looking at a map, when I was first looking at the map, my initial thought was, you know, there's comps here. That are showing like 2 million. But once I realized that we were down in a valley and not up on top of a hill, the confidence level I have in those other comps goes down dramatically. Mm-hmm. So I started looking at that and I'm thinking, man, I don't know that $1.3 million comp is actually a comp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not comfortable with it. So that was my initial thing. Because I was literally just looking at the numbers, and I was like, my first thing is, let's find out what it could be worth.
Sure.
And I wasn't, my initial gut was that I wasn't confident in a high enough ARV to do anything mm-hmm. with the property. That was number one.
Okay. So what did you think the ARV was? So that's a good conversation. Yeah. You know, what did you think initially, and then where did you arrive?
Right. So initially, we had acquired the property.
Hi, this is Christian Rios. As many of you know, I've been a member of New Wealth Advisors Club for over 7 years and got started when I was 17 years old with absolutely no real estate experience. One of the biggest lessons I've learned from being in the industry is the need for authentic relationships. If you're looking for an actual team locally in Southern California with all the resources needed to close deals, register for one of our free workshops by visiting www.joinnwac.com. Thanks for listening to the Flippin' Off Podcast.
So what did you think the ARV was? So that's a good conversation. Yeah. You know, what did you think initially, and then where did you arrive?
Right. So initially, we had acquired the property for $1 million even. The comps at that time that we had looked at were in the $1.45 million range. And so that's what we were thinking, you know, our comps were. And at the time, they were, you know, reasonably, you know, using everything that we had learned, but not actually running it by anybody. Mistake number one. Mm-hmm. That's what we thought the comps were. By the time that I sat down with Tim and Oscar, and we kind of, they helped me go through the comps, the new comps, this is 10 months after we had acquired the property. Mm-hmm. So a significant amount of time had passed. Mm-hmm. And as Melina has mentioned in a lot of the RPP and DPA and all that, that the market is kind of peaked and it's sort of starting to trend downwards. And it seems like the point houses are getting hit hardest right now. Mm-hmm. And so by the time that Tim and Oscar and I looked at comps, they were the actual comps for the property that we were that we had fixed up, rehabbed, were in the 1.0 to 1.1 range. And so the market had shifted significantly. And so that was part of, I think, what factored into Tim's, oh, crap.
You know? This is bad.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
And we had conversations of, well, a few things. But one was, can we lend him the money? Mm-hmm. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. And then quickly that became, well, no, we can't, right? And then it was, well,
can I mean, even free money.
Right. Even, yeah.
Even free money didn't
free
work.
Free money didn't work. No.
Right.
Not at all. And then it was, well, can we step in, finish the project, but then he has to short, right? So don't want to cause more pain. Mm-hmm. So then our roadmaps shifted quite a bit. It mm-hmm. was more like, man, you need to unload this property. Mm-hmm. You need to just stop where you're at. Mm-hmm. No more money. Dump it. Get out of it.
Cut your losses.
Move on. Yeah, absolutely. And then that's you started to work down that path.
Yep.
And so how did that feel when can you talk about what was happening for you at that point when you realized I have to dump this and what did that mean to you?
Yeah. At that point, it hadn't quite hit me yet after that meeting of like how much money I was going to lose. Mm. Because to purchase the property, I had borrowed $200,000 from my dad to purchase the property. Mm. And then we had borrowed $800,000 from a hard money lender. And we had borrowed another $120,000 from a different hard money lender to do the rehab. So the $1 million purchase price was $200,000. Well, yeah, $200,000 from my dad and $800,000 from the hard money lender for the purchase. And so we were into it for what I owed was $1.12 million just to repay everybody what we had borrowed. Mm-hmm. And so looking at the 1.1 sale price, if we were able to rehab it and fix it and flip it, was like, oh, I'm going to lose money. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it didn't really like dawn on me what that was going to mean. Mm-hmm. And it really hit me later of like just how bad of a situation I had put myself in. And then I was starting to kind of like really feel the pressure and really feel the kind of the sadness and, you know, a lot of that. And so that's when I reached out. I was in the mentorship mm-hmm. at the time.
Yeah. And in mentorship, I'm making you freaking dig deep.
Yep.
Look at yourself. Get honest. Yep. You're being required to journal, to like really look in the mirror. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Really face who I was being mm-hmm. that got me into the situation that I'm in. Mm-hmm. And so that was a tough, like looking in the mirror. Mm-hmm. Of the pride and the ego that was involved in thinking that I can do this without anybody, I don't need to ask for help. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those emotions were kind of coming to a head. Mm. And that was when I reached out to Frank. Mm-hmm. He was helping out with the mentorship. And I called him up and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm not feeling too hot about all this. And Frank said, hey, don't worry, man. Can't look at Frank right now. I'm gonna lose it. Mm-hmm. But he said, hey, just remember, I'd rather work with somebody who has gone through what you're going through than somebody who's never failed. Because you appreciate so much more what goes into all of this. Mm-hmm. You know, the risks that we take, the due diligence that we do, all of the work that goes in behind the scenes, you now know what that looks like. And I would much rather work with somebody who's gone through it and come out the other side than somebody who's never gone through it at all. And that really gave me the confidence to kind of stay in.
You believed him?
Yep, I absolutely did.
You know, I think, so what I know is, first of all, I didn't know that conversation ever took place until now, nor any details behind it. But what I did notice was that there was a definite attitude and a physiological change, if you will, in Eric, right? That I was like, huh. And yeah. I didn't really, what I left it with in my mind was he got it. And now he's free of all the other crap that he was dealing with, and he's able to move forward. So good. I just didn't know how it happened, right? And I love what Frank said to you, right? Because that's something that a lot of people don't understand. And taking it, you know, this is coming from a guy that very similar to you, had always had success. Didn't matter what I touched, what I did, what I set my mind to, always killing it, always having success, always being acknowledged for it, blah, 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 right? All that. Till I didn't. Right?
Yep.
And then it becomes definitely a dark valley. It becomes, I'm by myself. How am I going to do this? And then you start to shut down and all these other things take place, right?
Yep. Definitely.
And then it takes something or someone, right? It's either something that you see or someone says something that helps you to really, I guess, gives you that, I just relate it to the paddles, right? When you're laying on the ground and you're like, and then there's like, poof, you get that shock.
Yep.
And then you can breathe again. And then you start to gain some clarity and all that. And I know Frank has experienced it as well, right? And so that, I believe, came from not only, I think that came from Frank to you because he had gotten that clarity not long before you needed it, right? So putting all that together, it's like, man, it's everything just happened when it needed to happen, how it needed to happen. To be able to be here today,
I was just sitting here thinking the same thing. Like I was just, I know I just kind of spaced out right now, but I just had this moment of such gratitude for seriously, like divine momentum and divine intervention. When I think about, you know, as we started this conversation, I was thinking about, you know, when I first met you and your smile on your face and just, you know, the optimism and then seeing you step up and you telling me, I want to teach a buy and hold class, you know, and all of those things and knowing what a superstar you are. And then, you know, the mentorship and then the fact that, you know, Frank was set up to co-lead the mentorship with me at that time when you're in the mentorship. Like, think about all of those things that had to take place in order for the perfect thing to happen. And so I just had this moment of such gratitude for just for the club, you know, and all that it represents. One of the things I always say is that, you know, the club is so much bigger than all of us. Nobody is more important or bigger. Not one person is more important or bigger than the club in and of itself. And this, for me, is 1,000% proof of that. This is why. Because it had nothing to do with me. It wasn't because of me. It wasn't because of it. It was just, it's what the club is. And I believe that is a direct result of how the club was created, the foundation in which it was created, and to whom it was given to. And so now we see whom it was given to and what he does with his precious, precious thing that he has. So I know you're sitting there, Frank, with, you know, feeling, I bet you're like overwhelmed, yeah? Or what are you feeling? Like, what's happening for you?
I think I was feeling the same way. Like, I was feeling a lot of gratitude. That was all the chain of events that led to that. I mean, you look back and go, well, wish all of these things never happened so we can have this conversation. But I know that these things have to happen, that they're inevitable. And it's because of our process, the process that Eric needed to go through. Mm-hmm. And I was grateful that I had gone through it and been able to be there to give him the words that he needed to hear, because I knew those same words for myself. In looking at it, all right, so I'm going through this struggle. I've messed up, pride, ego, all of these things, but what's on the other side of it? What does it mean? Mm. You know, what does it mean at the end to go through this? I've like battle worn. I know that I'm going to be an excellent partner to somebody, that I'll never make those same mistakes again. Mm-hmm. And I know that's the same thing for Eric. So, like, if you want to like picture a lump of coal getting pressurized and turning into a diamond, that for me is what is coming out from this experience for Eric. Mm-hmm. So that's why I want to work with him.
And everybody loves diamonds.
Very valuable. And rare. And
good rare. Point. Good point. Such a great point. So, yeah, like just wow. So, so when Frank said those words to you, you believed him. I think that's so important, you know, because people can say words to you and we can just kind of like, you know, like a water off a duck's back and just be like, oh, okay, yeah, sure thing. But what I heard is that you believed him.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've mentioned a lot of times in class that, you know, your ability to know something in your head versus knowing it in your heart. And that transition definitely was made of like knowing in my head that there was support, you know, in the club.
Uh-huh.
And then getting that, you know, Frank being willing to talk to me and really knowing it in my heart that the support is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So should we talk about where we are now? Like what's the...
Sure. So after the conversations with Tim and Oscar, we looked at a bunch of different options. None of them really made sense. And so I can't remember. I think it was Tim that suggested that, you know, your best bet is going to try to sell it to... just like an end buyer, you know, a consumer who wants to buy it as, a, you know, as is and just wants to turn it into their dream home.
Right.
And so we pursued the avenue of listing it on the MLS and just trying to find a buyer. It was marketed for a while and then we got an offer at $900,000. So we kind of were suspicious that it was always going to be a short sale.
Yeah.
And so right now we're in negotiations with the lenders for the short sale. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of, it gives me so much more confidence to go through that process, knowing that I have a bunch of people who've been through that process a couple of times.
Yeah.
Kind of there if I have questions and stuff, you know.
You arrived.
You haven't arrived until you fail.
Yeah. And and it's so funny because Steph was just telling me the other day, she's like, well, now you're going to have a relatable story when you're talking to the homeowners at the door, which, you know, from the last podcast, you know, you'll remember that I said that I was really afraid to talk to homeowners at the door. And that was the whole thing I was trying to avoid by going this route in the first place. And Steph just kind of brought it around the other day. And she's like, well, now you're going to have such a good story. You can relate to the homeowners about the short sale process, you know, and just all of that. And I'm like, hey, yeah, I guess you're right.
I can so see Steph doing that. It's all right, babe. You got a story now.
Sorry.
Think how powerful you're going to be at the door.
did you just want to go to the door?
I was just like, yeah, this is an opportunity for growth.
Aw, isn't that the best?
Yeah, and I think what really shifted after the conversation with Frank was my, you know, I really can relate to where the homeowners are at of just wanting to bury my head in the sand. Mm. And just pretending like, hey, everything's going to work out if I just don't open my mail. You know, I don't talk to the lender, you know, all this stuff. Everything's just going to somehow magically work out. Mm-hmm. And so after talking with Frank, you know, it gave me the confidence to be like, okay, I can deal with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, in talking with Tim and Oscar and Melina of just being able to, okay, I can call my lender. I can talk to them. We can list it. We have a plan. And, you know, losing the money is going to be losing the money. You know, but...
It's just money.
Yeah, it's just money. Just have to make it back. You know, the plan of moving forward and the burden that was lifted at that point was tremendous. And, you know, I'm still, don't get me wrong, I'm gonna be super stoked once this actually gets sold.
Yeah, yeah.
Once and, you know, and we close and it's actually over and we can, you know, tally up all the numbers and figure out what repayments have to happen. Right. But, you know, but to me, that part now that was such a cause for stress before is now just like, okay, well, we're just gonna deal with it. You know, whatever happens is gonna happen. I have the confidence that we're gonna handle it and we'll just move forward.
And just go make more money.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Isn't that a beautiful thing? You can just go make more money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you believe you are?
Yeah.
That?
100%.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking, I'm not sure if it was the last podcast or this one, when you were sharing how, you know, you really didn't want to share or ask for help because it was a wholesale or something like that. And Frank kind of made a joke that said, you know, you had said that you were afraid that we would have told you that you're doing something wrong. And I think there's a fine line between being told that you're doing something wrong because you're not good enough, as opposed to, no, that's a wrong decision. And I think it's important for other club members that are listening to realize, like, reach out for help. Like, seriously, it doesn't matter. We're not going to make you wrong for – we're not going to make you wrong for getting involved, but we will try to help you out as much as we can. And at the end of the day, there's also that other club member who submits, quote, deals and is disappointed when we tell them that's not really a deal. So if you find yourself out there doing a deal or looking at a deal and you're afraid to come ask for help, ask yourself, is it really that you don't want to ask for help, or is it that you don't want to be told that that's not a deal because you need to get a deal done and you're going to do anything and everything you can to get involved in a deal, no matter if it hurts you in the end? So I think that's important, I think.
That's brilliant.
For other people to hopefully take out of this lesson is that we're here. We're not going to judge you or tell you're an idiot or you're stupid or anything like that for wanting to get involved in the deals. We're just going to help you, hopefully help you make a decision that, you know, guides you better than...
won't leave you in this, you know,
situation.
It's such a good point. You know, Marianne Bonko, it was in Hawaii, you know, this last week. And one of the things that she said was she had this realization and she asked herself this question: am I trying to get a deal or am I building a business?
Right.
So if you just sit with that for a minute and just really hear that, there's so much power in that. And at the end of the day, what we are about is building a business.
Right.
We aren't just about trying to get a deal. And when you're working your business from the perspective of, I just need a deal, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to pull the trigger maybe when you shouldn't. Maybe you're going to – you'll make mistakes. But if you work your business and you do your daily activities from the perspective of, I am building a business, it just is so much better, right? Your perspective will entirely shift.
Right. Like, I keep going to the idea of like in business, you got like a loss leader.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, I mean, businesses sometimes make conscious choices to do things that they know they're going to lose money at.
Yep.
Because they see a greater good in like losing money here is going to make us money there.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day in this business, not that I would ever do it intentionally, but I tend to look at situations where I've lost money, and I look at it as like it was just a loss leader. It's a cost of doing business. I learned so much more out of it. I tell Oscar, I say this all the time, I have spent way more money on way less education.
For sure.
And, you know, and at the end of the day, you are becoming a diamond in this, and like Frank said, they are rare. Mm.
And
valuable.
Yeah. So... Eric, thank you again for your share, for your willingness, for your courage to be so transparent and to share your story with all of us. I know that you're doing it because you care about other people, mm-hmm. and that this is for the greater good of those out there that are starting to embark on this journey. And who knows, right, where people are, where this is going to hit them. Some people haven't had it yet. Some people are maybe in the middle of it. Some people may be getting ready to do it, or those of us that have already been down this road mm-hmm. and know that it's okay and that it is valuable, and it does make us better leaders, better entrepreneurs, better business people, all of these things. The process is where the power is. So I thank you for that. I wanted to say thank you to Oscar and Tim for being there, right, to support him and to tell him the truth and to wrap him in a blankie, even if it was burlap. and Frank, I want to thank you for sharing yourself so openly and willingly with Eric, because, you know, for most people, everybody thinks you're just such an a-hole, right? Because you look so grumpy and you're so closed off. And
I like it that way.
I know you do. So, and I appreciate the fact that you shared yourself with Eric, seriously, because I know that it's authentic, and I know that that's the power in the club. And so for everybody out there listening, I do want to leave you with, I think, Marianne Vanko's perfect scenario, which is, are you working for a deal or are you working to build a business? And I say, go build your business. So everybody out there, go do that, the right thing, and build your business. So this is Melina Boswell. Flipping out today. Later. I'm Melina Boswell, your host of the Flippin' Off podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, we'd love for you to subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and tell your friends all about us. You can find more episodes of the Flippin' Off podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever else you like to listen to awesome podcasts like this. If you like what you've heard, we'd really appreciate it if you'd follow us on Facebook and Instagram and tell us the stories that you'd like to hear. Tim Jackson is our senior producer. Luke Jackson is our editor. Brothers. Josh Maldin is our producer. Sound design by Frequency Factory. Our executive producer is Mind and Mill. This was all created by Dave Boswell for New Wealth Advisors Club.